everyone. I'm Jennifer Francis.
And I'm Mick Fable. You're listening to Home on the Res, a radio podcast about housing on First Nations.
Home on the Res is produced by the First Nations National Building Officers Association.
I've learned so much working on this podcast. I feel like I'm better prepared to look after a house.
A house is a huge investment and a huge asset for individual homeowners and First Nations that build and maintain many houses.
I know. It's very intimidating.
Then this episode will be really exciting for you. It's all about building and maintaining each house so it's safe and it lasts as long as possible.
It seems like that's a challenge for a lot of First Nations. The houses don't last as long as they should.
Our Home on the Res reporter, Lori Dietz, talked to two people who focus on maintaining houses so they last as long as possible.
Lori had all the fun for this episode. And me, I'm just a host with a pretty face.
Mick, this is radio. Only I get to see your pretty face.
Lucky you.
Lori talked first with Bruno DiNardo. Bruno DiNardo has been at the National Research Council for 30 years. His work is evaluating innovative construction products that meet or beat the requirements in the National Building Code for things like durability. The project he's working on now is really innovative, a technical guide for northern housing.
This came to us from FINBOA, the First Nations National Building Officers Association. They asked us to put together a technical guide. So this guide is basically a summary of how we should build in the North, and it's a compendium of all kinds of deemed to comply solutions for the North. And so we're gathering all the experience of housing in the North with a team of building science experts and a team of Indigenous architects. And the Indigenous architects went out into the field and did some community consultations and produced some community-led house designs for the North. So we'll be covering geographically and also based on governance, the way things are governed. We'll be having First Nations and Métis and Inuit covered in this guide.
So why is it important for anyone, including Indigenous communities, to build homes to National Building Codes and Standards?
You have to build according to the code to know that it will perform, you know, structural, to maintain safety so it won't collapse, for anticipated loads. The code tells you what the loads are going to be for the occupancy and for snow loads and wind loads. So to design it structurally to be safe, foundations have to change depending where you are. And then after that, of course, thermal performance and building design changes as well. But again, it is a minimum code, and there's no reason why you can't build beyond code.
What should a council or a contractor consider if looking at the life cycle of a home?
There's professionals who do this for a living, and there are guides and books that are available to professionals that are updated on cost of construction, cost of materials, cost of labor. There is a lot of information. Every case by case, depending on the type of building, for houses, 1 and 2 family houses, the service life prediction could be 50-year or 60, 70. If you're building a school, you might want 100 years, especially if the school is also a post-disaster building, designated post-disaster for a place of refuge if there's a disaster. So depending on the type of building, the service life could be 50, 60, could be 100, could be more than 100 if it's an institutional building like a hospital. Again, it all comes down to expectations so that you can plan for the future and make your budgets.
So yeah. Especially in First Nations communities who are trying to build sustainable housing because they've had a lot of housing that's just not adequate, that doesn't stand up. Do you think it is generally lack of money and funds that hinders them from building adequate homes, or not enough knowledge?
That's actually a very good question, because I'd say it's a combination of both. That's why this guide that we're putting together, is a technical guide for northern housing, is going to have basically the science of what should be followed. Because even when we talk about windows and doors failing, that's right, a lot of times it's the foundation that may settle and the frame goes askew. And now the window doesn't open, or window leaks now because the frame of around the window deformed and caused the window to deform, and now it's not working. So you can talk about a window failing, but instead it was really the foundation that was the root cause of the failure. So it all comes down to best practice for foundation, for the building envelope, and then for windows and doors and the roofing that is chosen. it all comes down to, with whatever funds are available, to making sure whatever you do right, right? So that's the important thing. Of course, if more funds were available, you could have built, more durable housing with more durable materials. But then if it's not built right, then even though those more durable materials won't function, if the foundation settles and the framing goes off and the windows don't perform, right? So it is a combination of both. The questions you're asked, really, it's a combination of both. And having more funding is great for being able to build what you really want. But then it's definitely got to be built properly.
You know, it's so funny. This episode here in particular, the first time I read it, I was like, I don't know anything that I'm talking about. But I feel like I know so much more now.
There are so many options and new developments in materials and methods for housing.
Lori also talked with Tex McLeod. Tex does workshops for Canada Mortgage and Housing Commission and other organizations that are working on energy efficiency and air quality.
One thing that Tex told Lori is that CMHC is reducing their support for technical training. And that's a problem because it leaves a gap in knowledge needed to build and maintain houses. Here's Lori's conversation with Tex McLeod.
Okay, so Tex, first off, I'm going to get you to introduce yourself for me.
Very early on, I got involved in communicating information. So my job, I always saw as finding the information and then finding a way to get it into the hands of the people who build houses. So I've done that in energy efficiency, and I've done that in indoor air quality, and I did that with First Nations. For example, Gord Cook and I, who's a ventilation specialist, Gord and I put together an HRV hands-on installers workshop for CMHC, which has been held all over the country to try and help people install better ventilation. So I'm all about getting information, usable information that makes a difference to people who are working in the field.
Why are many homes in Indigenous communities not lasting as long as homes that are built off reserve?
There's probably lots of reasons. One, the houses were built quickly and for not much money. And that always was a big driver, trying to do it as much house as you can for as little as you can. And the houses have been built all across the country, but no one actually was requiring the houses to be built to the building code. So if the building code is the minimum you can do, we don't even know if the houses that have been built in most communities even meet that minimum requirement. They also, when being built quickly, were not built on good foundations. So that meant that in many instances, houses moved because of frost and moisture. The other thing to keep in mind is that a three-bedroom house with mom and dad and one child in it, and mom and dad work out and the child goes to school, and then you look at a family of six or eight and you look at the hours spent in the house, and First Nation houses would often have 3 to 4 times the people hours per week in a house. And so a house that might perform not badly with a small family, with a large family, the occupancy level has a lot to do with how the house stands up. And then you'd say, okay, so how was it built? And then how was it maintained? And in truth, many First Nation houses have not very much maintenance done on them. They get fixed when problems occurred. There's not much preventative maintenance. There's mostly corrective maintenance.
So many things that I don't think the regular person thinks of. We just think that people aren't taking care of their homes. And there's so much more to it than that. I would never think that, you know, it's just me and my son. A house would last way longer for us than it would be for a family of five, right? So
it's like a car. You put miles on a car and you put miles on a house. Those are people miles in a house, and they're road miles in a car. And then whether it's stop and go in traffic or highway makes a big difference, doesn't it? So you start to see how the impact of decisions early on show up in the house later.
When homes are being built in Indigenous communities, what are some of the factors that council should consider to ensure that homes last longer?
Many First Nations, when they're thinking that, you know, they've secured some funding, they're now thinking of building three houses, let's say. They might use a contractor, they might have their own crews, but they probably go to the lumberyard somewhere near them and they'll ask for a quote for a three-bedroom house, let's say. When you buy a house package, if the guy is trying to win the contract, he uses the least expensive of everything in the house. And unless you have your own specifications over and above what the building code asks for, you're getting the lowest end of almost everything that's out there. And it's not that they're trying to be cheap, it's that they're trying to win the contract. So, to my mind, to make houses last longer, a First Nation, it needs to be really clear. Our houses have lots of people in them. We need a commercial grade toilet. We want all of our taps that are going in the houses to be warranted, lifetime warranty. I've worked with many First Nations that have developed their own specification. They don't accept pressed wood doors. Some First Nations say, why do we put bifolds in? Because within about a month of the house being occupied, the bifolds are out at the side of the house. At some point, you've got to decide, yes, this is the minimum of what the building code's asking for. Knowing our community, knowing how many people are in the houses, here are the 10 things that we need to have in our houses. Like, there are so many choices you can make, and they're going to modestly increase the cost of your houses, but it's the investment you need to make in your houses to end up with more durability and lasting.
Is their decision to use cheaper contractors, cheaper products coming because the First Nations only want to build more homes with the money they have? Are they being told this is how much money you can spend per house?
CMHC has something called the MUP, and the MUP is a maximum unit price. So according to where you're building, they have this list of what you should be paying. And the First Nations need to push a little bit on that, because if the maximum unit price doesn't get them the house they need, then it's not a good investment. The way the building code is written, the assumption is that if you build a house in accordance with the building code, you should have a 50-year service life on your house. And wouldn't that be a pretty wonderful thing to know that your houses would last that long?
Thank you so much, Tex. You have a fantastic day.
Okay, and you too. All the best.
That was awesome.
Are you still nervous about owning a house?
Still a little nervous, but way more knowledgeable. Plus, I feel like I know the right questions to ask.
That's terrific. There's so much to learn about housing, but Home on the Res is a great introduction.
Home on the Res is brought to you by the First Nations National Building Officers Association.
Thanks to the FINBOA board members and CEO Keith Miracle for giving us this opportunity to learn about housing on First Nations.
Don't forget about John Krajowski and our journalism professor at the First Nations University, Shannon Avison.
And our Home on the Res reporter and producer, Lori Dietz.
Thanks for listening to Home on the Res.